Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is the captain of this ship for this month and Ponfar enthusiast, Mr. Spencer Worf Williams.
That's so much you're just throwing in there.
Dang, man.
Yes. Ponfar. Also with us is our cadet, apparently, as of last week. And
2 weeks ago.
Non-intern slash part-timer slash coffee bringer who brings no coffee slash I need to be nicer to slash
I don't work
really.
In the galley.
You don't work at all yet. Amy is with us. And we got another great show for you today as we are going to be continuing this trek through the stars as we do another review of a great Star Trek film of the past, and that is Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. So stick around as we dive into that and get a little deeper into those little bit of the Ponfar
opinions. There's no Ponfar in like
stop trying to make Ponfar happen. It's
the great
not
thing
going
is
to
people
happen.
People are listening to this and they're gonna be like, what the heck is Ponfar? Yeah, you're gonna want to wiki that crap because but anyway, before we get into that, Spencer, why don't you give them opening credits?
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all of your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. We got over allegedly 300 episodes over on our website, filmlosophers.com. We got everything from anime to sci-fi to action to horror to suspense to everything that you're looking for. If you're looking for it, it has to do with movies or the industry, we got it. Head on over to filmlosophers.com where you can find us there. Also, you can find us on anywhere where podcasts are streaming, whether if it's iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart, tune into your heart's desire. Anywhere you can find us on the platforms, The Filmlosophers will be there. We'll give you the social links at the end. We are in our third week of Star Trekdom.
Week three.
And the captain has hailed the control of the ship, so I shall pass it on to Spencer.
All right, before we get into our main discussion of Star Trek VI, let's talk about what we skipped over, which is Star Trek V.
Because we didn't see that one.
We actually didn't see this one.
After
the conversation.
After extreme bias on Spencer's part for this particular odd-numbered film, we just kind of unanimously didn't watch it.
Except for a brief clip, which will be explained within your recap. Yes.
So Spencer, give us what we missed out.
So first off, I did watch it because, like,
you know, you told us not to.
No, I told you not to. Not that I wasn't going to. I said at the beginning of the month I was watching all of them. So
whatever,
I'm 1 through 8.
Give us your synopsis recap, Captain.
Okay, so
Captain.
Yes, thank you.
Lieutenant.
Nice to me. Yeah.
Captain.
Okay, so just for context, I saw this movie once a very, very long time ago, and I thought it was weird and boring back then. And, you know, in the Star Trek community, this kind of is like up there for, like, you know, the worst Star Trek movie. And upon rewatching
Number five.
Yeah, number five.
Because that's what you said when you told us about not watching it. You said, you don't need to see number five. Mm-hmm. It is the worst one of the bunch. And I believed you.
Mm-hmm. I full-heartedly agree. And yes, same Z's.
Okay. So after watching it, I've changed my mind.
You know what? This, like, could be, I am one to not miss out on movies, sir. How dare you deny me?
Wait, hold on.
I am a young, budding Star Trekker.
I want you to listen to what I'm actually saying.
A Star Trek master, a Star Trek Padawan here.
You better calm down there, Lieutenant, before you get stripped down to Ensign.
Ensign? What's Ensign?
An Ensign. It's next.
Oh, aren't those the trees from Lord of the Rings?
No, those are Ents.
Okay.
But an Ensign. So,
is that
remember
when
Scotty's nephew that died? He was an ensign. He was an ensign.
He still mattered.
He did, but he was an ensign.
He made Scotty cry.
He's a snephew.
He's a snephew. Is that another type of role that we don't know about? Ensigns and snephews?
Man, you have too much fun when you're not in control.
Hey, welcome to my world, buddy. Tell us about the Ponfar ensigns.
No, there was no Ponfar in this movie. Yeah, I think this is one of those.
That should have been what Kirk screamed out instead of
Ponfar.
Ponfar!
That makes even less sense.
That would have been great. It would have been perfect.
No.
Because then, like, Spock would have immediately snapped out of it. Like that.
Okay. Anyway.
He might be an ensign before this episode's over.
Might already be an ensign. I just haven't said it. So yeah, the thing about this movie is I think I have the difference of being older now and more experienced in movies. Mm-hmm. And this movie is not great still.
Okay.
But like it's the worst one seems very harsh. Like I'm leaning towards the one you skipped over, the first, like the motion picture.
Uh-huh.
That one's just the worst because it's boring.
Okay, so what's in this one? What happens in this one?
Not much. there's literally two things that happen in this movie.
It's the Star Trek TV special that no one talks about.
I mean, kind of. That's like the feel of it. It feels like two separate things got mishmashed together.
Okay.
One of them being a camping story between Bones, Kirk, and Spock.
That sounds like the beginning of a joke.
Yeah.
Like, Kirk, Bones, and Spock go into the forest to camp.
Yeah. And also,
and then Spock stops him and says, this is illogical.
Sulu and Chekhov are there, but not with them. They're just...
They're lost in the woods?
Yeah, they're lost in the woods.
They're lost in the woods? That's a song.
You know what?
What?
That seems like not to keep going back
to...
Not to go back to what I've been saying.
Lost in the woods.
But like an episode of Futurama.
It's an episode of The Big Bang Theory, but they got lost in the desert on the way to Comic-Con. No.
I don't know.
I would ask why, but keep going. We're never going to get out of this.
Shore winter. Leave. That's really the only reason.
Okay.
So instead of what most sailors do, which is ponfar during shore leave,
you're really stuck on this ponfar.
Shore
nonsense.
Leave happens more than once every 7 years.
You never know. I mean, do you know the regular timing for these guys in
ponfar? Yeah.
In Fleet Academy?
Are we talking about shore leave? I'm certain if I go Google.
Google. Sorry, Spencer. Continue.
Okay, so while they're, like, on their camping trip or whatever, there's a hostage situation by Spock's brother. Also, he has a brother.
Hold on.
Hey, if you're about to ask, hey, why did I gloss over that? Because pretty much the movie does.
No.
Brother.
So the one who is doing the hostage taking is Spock's brother.
Yes.
What?
Okay.
Half-brother?
What's his name? Yes.
Whole brother?
Cybok.
Cybok.
Yes.
I feel like he belongs in the Mortal Kombat lineup.
Cyborg!
Which is...
I'm sorry!
Yeah.
Yeah, so for some reason, Star Trek has a history of, it only happened twice, but of giving Spock siblings, and then he just never mentions them.
Wait, did you say this happened twice?
Yeah, this movie is the first time it happened.
Uh-huh.
And then much, much later, he had a sister he doesn't talk about.
Okay.
I wish this was on camera because I just panned to an imaginary camera in confusion and it would have been brilliant.
Yeah, and that, yeah. Like, her name's Michael. It's a whole thing.
Wait,
her name's
hold on,
Michael.
Hold on.
We've got
hold on.
Savick.
You said
Cybok.
Her name is Michael?
Yeah.
Get it, Michael.
Is her first name George? Like, because it just doesn't make any sense.
It could also be pronounced Mikhail.
No, it's Michael.
See, no. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, but that's like way down the line, so you don't have Cybok. To worry about that.
Michael.
Yeah, so he's doing this because he needs a starship because Cybok feels that he has found where God lives. And so...
Do the Vulcans have any mushrooms that grow in there?
Well, no. Cybok is exiled because he rejects
logic. For good reason, apparently.
He rejects logic and kind of like lives on his emotions. And stuff. And like, okay, I cannot explain this next part to you properly because I don't understand it.
Uh-huh.
But he has the ability somehow to use people's pain to get them onto his side, but they're happy about it. I don't understand what
it
is.
So he's a politician, is what you're saying.
Yeah, basically.
He's not just a masochist.
No, he uses them to get them to join his side.
He uses their pain.
He's a politician.
I'm confused.
Yeah, I'm confused about that whole thing. But like,
is it like a manipulation kind of thing, or is it like
it's a manipulation kind of thing? But I don't get it. Still, I didn't get it before. I still don't get it. It's very confusing to me because like no other Vulcan seems to have this ability.
And you said so. I'm going to keep calling him Sabacc because that's wrong and on Star Wars. But
Sybok?
Thank you. I said Sabacc. Sorry, it's a card game.
Retaining knowledge is cool.
But so is he technically full Vulcan?
If he's his brother.
No, because.
Because they have different mothers.
Because that's okay, the thing. Then they might because be. Spock is half human.
Ooh, Spock's daddy a cochino.
Well, and that's the thing that he's like, he's going on pure feelings.
He's like, honey, you don't understand. It was going through Pon Farr and you were far away.
Pretty much at that point, he's either dead or he's the ambassador to Vulcan.
All right. So we got Spock's brother who's taking people hostage because he needs to take a ship to go find God.
Yes. Okay.
So now, when you say God, mm-hmm. is that a specific God? To like, because obviously like, within the Star Trek universe, mm-hmm. there's different types of peoples, and obviously as we'll get into this one, there's different types of races of creatures, mm-hmm. and each one has their own kind of almost like religious foundings. Mm-hmm. Is he looking for like the Vulcan God or the?
Oh no, this one's supposed to be all of them, because
an ultimate creator kind of thing.
Yeah, like because everyone has like you know. A similar-ish, like, you know, if you, like, get the Cliff Note version.
Peace going for eternity.
Yeah, like, so, like, similar, uh-huh. like, religions type thing. So uh-huh. they're like, oh, like, this must be the origin point of everything type thing, blah, blah, blah. So he, like, basically does his, like, magic pain thing to, like, most of the crew except for, like, Kirk himself. And, like, they're all like, yeah, let's mutiny against Starfleet and just go wherever.
So he actually gets like Kirk and all of them to join him, or
not really, not Kirk,
but everyone else,
pretty much everyone.
Because Kirk's pain is too deep.
More if he just
because Kirk's camping, out. Okay?
On
no, because like he like gets roped in with the Enterprise because the Enterprise is the only ship that can do anything at this point, despite being the oldest ship in the fleet. It seems like
and it can just do anything.
Well, I mean, like, it's just, like, you know, bad storytelling. Like, there's many other ships that should have, like, been in charge of this whole mission. But, so, Kirk and Sybok and the crew go towards the center of the universe, where, like, uh-huh. there's this great impassable barrier that no one's been able to pass, but apparently it's just fake, and no one's ever actually just gone in there. And then that they find, like, a planet, and they go down there, and, like, God's like... there apparently and so like they're talking to God and he's like, you know, I've been many names to many people, blah 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 blah, mm-hmm. and like Sybok's very psyched to have found him, and so like God's all like, hey, can this ship take me out of here? And Sybok's like, yeah, yeah, totally can. And then of course Kirk is like, wait a minute, why does God need a spaceship to get out of here? And then God is like, who are you? And he's like, don't you know? Like, and this just becomes like this, why do you need this? Like, and like, then he just shocks him away. But then like, you know, that just gets everyone on the thing of like, oh, this is not God. This is just some weird space entity that has electrical powers.
Interesting.
It's Senator Palpatine all over.
I'm just getting I'm getting like all that. The vibes from Futurama. So keep talking because
he's going to find it somewhere.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll find something cool. So basically, cutting it quick, Sybok dies because he's like trying to take
well deserved
fake okay. God out. And then, you know, that was pretty much the end of the movie.
And camping.
Yeah, then they went back to camping.
Seriously?
Yeah,
I was joking. Oh my God.
No, it starts with camping and it ends with camping.
I just realized the guy who played. So we're going to be talking about Six, The Undiscovered Country. And the guy who plays apparently St. John Talbot in Five is the guy who plays Gorkon in part 6. So, hey, you know, recurring character.
Yeah, that happens a lot.
Recurring actor.
Longevity.
Because, like, there's, like, lots of repeat people. Like, Tim Russ pops up all over in Star Trek.
He's like, surprise, it's me, but not me.
So, yeah, that's basically Star Trek V, The Final Frontier. It's not a great Star Trek movie. But, yeah, if you like seeing Row, Row, Row Your Boat.
That clip.
Yeah,
I feel like that's got to be something that people really experience.
I think that was enough because when you started the conversation, because we came to the studio to watch 6, and you're like, wait, before we start, I need to show you what happened in 5. And you're like, there's a camping trip and they're singing Row, Row, Row Your Boat. And I'm like, what? Mm-hmm. And you queued it up and I'm just like, I feel like Spock right now.
it's super weird. But yeah, no, I don't think it's the worst one. There's one really bad one that came before it with the motion picture, and there's one really bad one after it, which we're not talking about, which is Star Trek X Nemesis, which had Tom Hardy in that one.
There you go.
Yeah. So moving on, let's talk about the actual movie we're here to talk about, Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country.
Yay!
Eddie, can you hit us with that synopsis?
Sure thing. On the eve of retirement, Kirk and McCoy are charged with assassinating the Klingon High Chancellor and imprisoned. The Enterprise crew must help them escape to thwart a conspiracy aimed at sabotaging the last best hope for peace.
All right, the film stars William Shatner, Leonard Nimoy, DeForest Kelly, James Doohan, Walter Koenig, George Takei, Nichelle Nichols, and Christopher Plummer. Fun fact, Christian Slater also showed up as a cameo in this role.
I got really excited.
He got $750, and he framed that paycheck for the role.
$750?
Yeah.
Dang.
I mean, he was a fan of Star Trek, so yeah. I mean,
but $750 still, like, well, there are people that do that for free.
I mean, the equivalent of that nowadays is like maybe $1,200. So
isn't it because he had speaking lines?
I guess, but that's then we'd have to check. What was it, Daniel Craig when he was a stormtrooper? I want to know how much he got paid. Different. This is Star Wars thing. Find out later. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, you're crossing the streams here, man.
Yeah,
don't cross the streams.
That's what they used to say when we would pee in the same hole.
That's not me.
Okay, so anyway. let's talk about expectations walking into this movie. What did you expect after seeing 3 Star Trek films so far?
I was still really excited. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to lie. I was like, okay, I didn't watch 5.
No, you mean 2 so far?
No, we watched 3, remember?
Well, you said expectations before going into this one.
Yeah, because you guys had watched 3.
We had watched 3 so far.
Yeah.
You're right.
So, yeah, I was still really excited. And when you're like, don't watch 5, you don't have to. It's bad. And I was like, okay, Tris Spencer, it'll be gay. And yeah, I was excited. Eddie, what about you? Your expectations?
In terms of expectations, like, honestly, my biggest thoughts were, the caliber of filmmaking thus far has been good. We haven't seen any major, like, dropping the balls kind of thing. Giggity. We haven't seen any major foul-ups or anything. Everything that we've seen thus far has been really well done and really well acted, despite the years and years of parodying William Shatner's speech ability and acting ability. Honestly, I was looking forward to it, and I was thinking that 5 was going to thwart my mindset on enjoying this one, but after hearing that wonderful recap, I feel like I may have missed out on something fun. So thanks a lot, Spencer. I blame you.
You didn't. Especially since this one has zero connective tissue. Like, the whole ones we watched before.
We literally saw a scene where Bones said, you were better before you died.
Like, we haven't gotten there yet. Shush.
That was in the fifth one. I liked him better before he died.
In the row, row, row your boat thing.
Yeah. So, like, 5 did have some occasional good lines. Like, I'll
by
give
the
that.
Way,
yeah.
Drunk Bones is the same bones in every other movie we see him in. That man looks like he is sauntered, and I always thought, I'm like, man, he looks like he's drunk. But maybe it's just his like performance ability, or maybe something like maybe he's got like gum in his mouth or something. I don't know. And then I saw that scene, and I'm like, that looks right, because he looks like how he is and everything else. So he's just a drunken Romulan ale drinking doctor.
I mean,
maybe he likes scotch too.
Maybe he just drinks on the job and he never talks.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense too.
Oh dear.
What about you, Spence? Since we're talking expectations, did you have any prior to this? Because you're the one who's actually been rewatching a lot of these for like the second or third time.
Actually, this is probably the one, well, besides Star Trek V, that I don't remember as well. Mostly because I thought this was the one that had Christopher Lloyd in it, not the other one.
Not the third one?
Yeah, so it's like when he showed up there, I was like, wait, what's this movie about?
Our blackface Christopher Lloyd.
Yeah, like, yeah, that's continuing. Yeah. There's still a lot of blackface.
Blackface. It's like, man, if you just wanted to put African-American people in the show, just put African-American people in the show. Yeah, you got one, and then you got one who's in like high command, and that's it. There's nobody else.
Yeah. And
man, it's like Star Wars.
Yeah, so mostly this movie was like just trying to learn what was this movie about, because I had no idea. Coming out of the movie, I was like, yes, this was the conspiracy one. I vaguely remembered it, and I was like, this movie rocks.
You mean conspiracy in the actual movie?
Yeah, actual movie.
I'm not thinking, like, because we've talked about extensively the curse of the odd number films.
Which I hope people realize is not like a real thing.
But it feels like
it is.
Okay. You made it feel, so coming into this, you made it feel like not only it was canon, much like the cursed films, it was like, if you knew, you knew.
Okay, then I've done you a disservice. It's not true. Like, okay. It's just unfortunate.
You do understand. You are the foremost expert here at the table when it comes to Star Trek.
Yes, but like you have also watched Star Trek 3, and that was perfectly fine.
But
right?
That was the thing. You also had led it us to believe that that one was connective and we should watch it.
Mm-hmm. You also said that that one was probably the better ones of the odd numbers.
Odd numbers, correct. And now we miss Faux God trying to steal a starship. Yeah. And a dead brother.
A dead Cybok.
Yeah.
Cybok. Oh my gosh.
That's the card game they play in Star Wars.
I know. That's so okay. Funny.
So Eddie, what are your like impressions after coming out of this movie?
After watching it, honestly, I had fun with this. This was a little bit different in terms of storytelling. It wasn't focused on the exploration or of space, or it wasn't about like this new creation. It wasn't about sci-fi tech. It was about a coup that occurred unbeknownst to anybody, and the level of like detective work needed to figure out this whodunit. I really enjoyed how well the film paced that to the very, very end, which added this huge like climactic suspenseful situation, which you knew they were going to go in and save everybody and blah blah blah. Like you knew all that was going to happen, but to the level of watching it on foil as you're seeing, you know, everybody trying to beat this clock to save Kirk and Bones and thwart this huge assassination attempt on whomever, it was really good. And I'm surprised because as we got out of that, you had mentioned that 2, 3, and 4 have this like connective story arc, and you said after that arc is gone. Right. And I was worried because I really liked that arc, and I wasn't too sure how they were going to build on that or make it, you know, improve on it essentially, because that story had a lot of heart to it. It had a lot of like a lot of emotional acting that really seemed legit. I've heard so many times about everybody making fun of, you know, Shatner's, you know, end speech at Spock's funeral. And I'm like, that was actually really
fun of that.
A lot of people made fun of it. Futurama specifically.
There you go.
So like there was a lot of that, but this was actually really good. So I enjoyed it. What about you, Ames? First impressions.
I actually really enjoyed it.
You're taking my word. once, but it's
but I did really enjoy it. I did have things that I'll nitpick later because they're kind of hilarious, and I had expressed them to Spencer at length after the movie. But yeah, this, even though you had stated that there was no connectivity from this one to the other ones, you still kind of, in not knowing what happened in 5, could almost take 6 and kind of butt it up against 4. And it would almost be kind of like...
like if you did like a time jump
yeah.
of like after the or events of that
like,
one.
If it was like when you did X-Men and then Days of Future Past, where you had that kind of time jump. There was time in between, but it was still in the same universe. It was just a little bit later. It didn't feel entirely disconnected. It still felt like it was part of that story and part of that arc, which I really liked. And I also liked that... the graphical, that's something to talk about when it comes into later. But I really enjoyed it. I'm trying to save my words, so I have talking points for
Spencer,
later.
Spencer, what were your first impressions?
Help!
No, I already talked about that.
Oh, you already said yours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do want to put it in there, though. Like, 5 did not have anything connecting to the previous.
Yeah, 5 sounds like it was...
It was a real just standalone title.
Because of the fact that in this one, there's a lot more... recognition, like I think the basic implications of that arc from 2 through 4 were the reconnections of Spock with his friends and Spock reconnecting with his human side, which I think, to Amy's credit, culminates perfectly with this film. You know, and as we'll get into it, I assume, you know, talking about the elements of Spock feeling so human that he decides to become this ambassador for a race of people that nobody even wants in the universe. So I feel like this does play as a really good end cap to that arc. And I agree with Amy, like if this one was the next one in the line, it would have made sense just putting that time jump there and, you know, seeing this as the ultimate ending for that story arc. It does fit in a way. But it's not like sequentially like in that order. So, yeah.
Okay. So I think I want to briefly touch upon the Klingons in general. Because in this movie, there's a lot of racism.
Yes.
Oh, yes. My God.
Yes.
But I kind of want
to. If ever there was a more exclamation point on that the Klingons are. The African Americans of the universe.
Here's the thing: they weren't always though. Like here, like
is it's that funny that you say that. Yet
is so white.
Everything we've seen thus far of Klingons is they're black faced, they're aggressive, and they're individuals who are like secluded to certain neighborhoods of the galaxy,
and nobody can come in, and nobody should be going out.
And if you do go in, it is a hostile environment that could mean the execution of a treaty and all-out war with just this one race of people, you know, and it's like
everybody
like,
else.
Oh my gosh, do you want to talk about the Reagan era? Because we could talk about the Reagan era, the war on crime and the war on drugs.
Okay, so
come on, Nancy Reagan.
Talking about the Klingons that you've seen in this movie, these are the redesigned Klingons.
Yeah, and they're still black.
But the ones before that weren't black. They were more of an Asian stereotype.
And they even probably recognized it at some point because this movie has the most verbose Klingons I have ever seen. And they talk a lot in like aspects of reading from actual novels, quotes that they say, everything like that. And it's like, okay, we get it. You're trying to make efforts to make them seem more intelligent. But at the same time, then you put in other Klingons who are just, to have lack of a better term, be galactically ghetto in the entire universe. And it's like, oh my God.
Like, this is going to sound like the weirdest thing to say about a group of people who don't exist. But, like, these Klingons were the most, like...
human.
Earth-washed Klingons I've ever seen.
Earth-washed Klingons. Like, I approve of this. Hashtag Earth-washed Klingons.
Yeah.
Because that's the best way to put it. Yeah. Because, like... after this, like, especially in, like, DS9, Klingons are not like, oh, like, let me recite a whole bunch of Earth-based things. No, like, they talk about their own stuff. and like you hear a lot about like Kalis and like a whole bunch of like their writers, and like you, like when people bring people up, you're like, oh yeah, he's that guy. That
well,
guy.
And they even say in like it's interesting that you mentioned that, because in the movie they even say like Klingon based writers. Like apparently at some point these writers that they're talking about, or they're saying,
they said it's not as beautiful until you read it, and they're talking about Shakespeare, it's not as beautiful until you've read it in the original Klingon.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, I'm like, hold up,
I'm like,
what,
I don't remember Shakespeare being Klingon.
I'm like, but cool. I mean,
if a brother had, you know, the scaffold forehead, by all means. I mean, I just never saw that. Makes sense, because he's bald. Throughout history, they've just made him to look
English.
Human.
Oh my God.
I mean, if he looked like Christopher Plummer without an eye patch.
As long as they don't look like Christopher Lloyd. That's all I'm saying. That was straight. I mean, come on. Like, you can't be as blatant as like Chris. Go ahead, Spencer.
Yeah, no, it's sad now. But like,
it is sad. I'm like, oh my God. They're black people.
Yeah.
Gene Roddenberry, you racist.
He's dead.
Yeah, he's dead. Yeah, he died after the movie. Yeah. After screening the movie.
He killed him, apparently. yeah, no, but like, this is a problem. Like,
Amy's going to snort, by the way. She's still laughing over there.
I'm trying not to. Gotta control it. Gotta control it.
But like, this movie kind of marks like the low point, and like from here on out, it's like an upward swing for like the Klingons.
I'm sorry, Amy's still going.
No, I see her.
It's like a slow vibration over the other end of this table.
I'm sorry. It's just the movie killed a man in 48 hours.
Well, I mean, the director, Nicholas Meyer, for this one, it was said that he got into an argument with Gene Roddenberry about like edits that he had, and he essentially...
He killed the man.
Yeah, looking at like the trivia page on IMDb for this movie, it seems like there was a lot of friction all over the place.
Yeah.
Not the fun guy.
No, like all bad kind.
See, I'm not talking about Ponfar. She's talking about Ponfar.
There it is.
She snorted.
I'm sorry. Trivia page.
Yeah, no, just like it seemed like people were trying to get certain things to be in this movie, and then like, a lot of times it's the director himself that I see, like, being like, nah, we don't need that. Which, I mean, you need someone to make sure that the movie is not, like, overly, like, full of, like, extra nonsense.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But, like, there's certain things where I feel like he missed the point of, like, you know, certain
absolutely.
People. Like, specifically, this is going way late in the movie, but we're kind of just hopping all over the place. With Uhura, during the certain scene with Uhura, there is a scene where she needs to like translate Klingon, but they've brought all these books to the bridge to like help her do that, and everyone's like flipping through pages rapidly. This lady has been like the communications officer on the bridge of the Enterprise for, I don't know, 20-ish years at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems wild to me that like she cannot do this. And
yeah.
It kind of just like, it feels like someone is just like poo-pooing Uhura.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Especially since it seems like each version of Uhura after this point is like just an expert in their field.
And yeah.
Like, they would not have this trip up.
No, absolutely not. And it's something that J.J. Abrams was pretty smart in making sure to kind of keep that tight and like, okay, not only is she the communications expert, but she's an expert linguistics, whatever, whatnot, that can speak all these different languages. So it's like, yeah.
Actually, in Strange New Worlds, which is a show that has the Enterprise, which is covering the time that it was captained by Christopher Pike before Kirk took over, there's a, I think she's an ensign still. Ensign Uhura is there, and she's just like on like, you know, a tour. Actually, I think she's a cadet. She's
is
a cadet.
It the same Aurora?
Yeah, it's the same one.
Okay.
But like she's like, you know, like just getting into Starfleet, and like she's like doing like, you know, a tour with them. And like there is an episode where she has to like basically live translate something she's never seen before. And like, you know, you can like see her working, and like the person you see working would never have the problem that is in this movie.
Yeah.
And like I like even like without anything that came after this, I feel like Uhura is like too smart for this problem.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I'm pretty sure Nichelle Nichols also knew that as well.
Yeah. So like, it's just one of those things where I'm like, it sucks. It really sucks. So anyway, actually getting into this. So there is a peace meeting because the Klingons blew up a moon that orbits their sun. I mean their planet, which seems weird, but like, I guess that kind of falls into that racism thing of like, well, I guess they just don't know how to take care of their own things because yeah. Like, Starfleet released a scathing report of like low like standards and blah blah blah. And I'm yeah. like, it's real nice to talk down to people.
Yeah. It's very interesting. I'm sorry, something just came to mind. The fact that the Chancellor, his daughter, and Christopher Plummer's character are light-skinned Klingons. Mm-hmm. And the other ones are dark-skinned Klingons. And they're the ones who are the more eloquent and verbose Klingons. Because everyone knows if you're closest to white, you're all right. So I'm just... And I'm like, I just realized that. Like, oh my God. This movie's racist. I'm telling you this now. Mm-hmm. After seeing the movie the other day and right now, my whole perspective on the movie has shifted drastically. I don't even know how the rest of this episode is going to go. I'm telling you now.
Well, I know Christopher Plummer like fought to be like, I don't want to be in that heavy makeup. Put me in something lighter. And I feel like everyone just was like, oh, yes, lighter would be cool. And I feel like we ended up here. And then we ended up, I hope, unintentionally saying something. But I could also see that being very intentional.
This is going to be a fun conversation. It's definitely intentional. It's intentional.
Yeah, you hope for the best, but then you get this.
Good luck, my friend.
Yeah. So, we are stuck with this nonsense. And so, you know, Kirk has been volunteered by Spock, who Kirk is furious by this, that he must help, like, the Klingons and bring, like, the Chancellor to Earth.
Because Spock is now the ambassador to the High Chancellor.
Yes. After everyone on the Enterprise is like, I don't want to go, blah, 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 these guys suck, blah, blah, blah. These guys smell, blah, 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 which I was like, what the heck is happening? When the Klingons first transported over, and like, people were like, oh, I can't believe the smell. And I was like, this is unsettling.
It is. Spencer, more things are coming to mind. Oh my God.
Yeah, so like...
Like, I swear to God, if they would have said, like, Klingon shea butter, and I'm just saying, people say that. This movie's racist.
We've established this movie's racist. No, but it's have becoming... you seen Kim Cattrall of this? That was, no.
No, we haven't even gotten to the other part where, keep going, because this is... Keep going.
Briefly, Kim Cattrall is in this movie, and she's actually the one who shut down that conversation that people were having. She is Spock's, like, self... Well, not self-appointed. Spock has, like...
Has appointed her, deemed her...
Yes.
His succession line or some... Not yes. Trash.
Yeah, well, I don't know, because, like...
She emotes too much with her eyes to be a Vulcan.
Would you like to talk about your impressions on Kim Cattrall's Vulcan?
Where is Robin? Bring back Lieutenant.
They literally took Kim Cattrall
mm-hmm. and put
on
head.
And put on Will Byers' headpiece on it.
Except they cut it back.
No, to give... Will Byers. It's all shaved on the side.
No, it's not all shaved on the side.
On Kim Cattrall.
She has literally, it looks like they took like the top portion.
She looks like she's wearing the top of an acorn on her head.
That's, here's yeah, the thing. That is accurate.
She wears that acorn better than Will Byers did.
That is true.
Yes.
Like that. Yeah. I mean, that's the real thing I feel bad about for Will. He looked like a mess.
He did.
And mind you, we're talking about more recent Will Byers, not child Will Byers.
Yeah, season four Stranger Things.
Like, you didn't even allow him to. Come on. So, Kim Cattrall.
Yes.
First off, she emotes way too much with her eyes to be a Vulcan. Second off, Just no.
Which is, it's strange that like the non-Spock Vulcans we've been dealing with have had a problem with like over-emoting, it seems like.
Except for Robin, yes, who was Kirstie Alley's replacement in three and four. Mm-hmm. Who balanced having the logic aspect and coming across still like in that space, not like in caring, but in completely like
toned, non-emotional logic.
Yeah, and it was so well balanced, and I was like, I like this Vulcan. I like this Robin.
I like this Vulcan.
I like this Robin. I mean, even the High Priestess was emoting a little too much for me, but she's a High Priestess, whatever. Yeah. So, like, we've got that. And then we have Kim Cattrall, and I was like, where the heck is Lieutenant Savick at this point? Like, come on. Don't play. And then the whole, like, turnabout, and I'm gonna, like, tell Kirk that he's wrong, and I'm gonna be like, do you know that the workers used to throw their wooden shoes into the machinery? They were called sabot. It's where the word sabotage comes from. And you're like, you sketch. You hag a sketch.
I mean, it is kind of on brand for like...
Kim Cattrall? Yes.
No, I was going to say for like Vulcans to be like, well, let's play by exactly the rules.
Yeah. I just didn't like her. And it was frustrating. And I'm like supposed to be like, yay. And I'm like, no.
Just like that?
Yes. I'm sorry. So yeah.
Go ahead, Spencer.
The Klingons and really white non-makeup to Christopher Plummer.
Yes.
In an eye patch.
So we have dinner with the Klingons.
And people get crunk.
It is the most awkward dinner I feel like I've ever seen on Star Trek, definitely, but in a movie probably also as well. Especially since, again, we have those little touches of race. There's a real theme here. It's not the theme I thought it was
going
to be.
Keep going, because this gets worse as we continue to talk about it.
Because even at the beginning, it starts off really weird. Like, the Klingons don't know how to use napkins, which is like...
It's so ridiculous.
Like, and it made it. They made them eat like they're savages, even though there's a bunch of eloquent Shakespeare-speaking people at the table. These other ones, the darker ones eat like savages, mm-hmm, and it's like, what is happening? By the way, the one who plays what's her name,
the Chancellor's daughter,
Azit Burr,
Chancellor's daughter,
the Chancellor's, mm-hmm, daughter, she's Hispanic. So I feel offended.
They did her double dirty. We didn't even talk about that. Her high makeup, like,
oh yes, you were.
He's so
upset about her.
By the way, she is Edward James Olmos' wife in Stand and Deliver.
Serious? She's so pretty.
She is.
Then what the heck did they do to her hair? They made her look like she had like maybe picked up some like magazines from the early to mid 80s. She's so pretty there. Like,
oh.
Yeah, but they made her look like she picked up like mid 80s magazines. And then they literally were just like, do you know what we're going to do? We're going to give you biggest, blockiest, like,
no,
blue.
No, what they were going to do is they grabbed those magazines, took all the samples, and then threw it on her face and just smeared it across.
Smeared. And they go, do you know what else you really need? You need this metal headband that is going to pull all your hair back so that we can acknowledge, yes, you are a Klingon by your forehead, because you have no right to have hair that is luxurious and like free-flowing like the other men folk. Like, no,
this movie's not good now that I'm like really
see here's the thing about this movie,
it's racist
and then this racism is around a story that is quite decent.
It's a decent story. Yeah, it's not lying,
but like the problem is the more you think about it, the more you notice, oh, this does not make me feel good.
Well, no.
Look at his face. He's getting so downtrodden. No,
because like I had such a great outlook on this movie. I was excited to talk about this. Now I'm just like, crap. Like we haven't even gotten to the point to where like the whole incident occurs.
Yeah, we haven't.
And you know what that incident is? There's murder. An assassination on the High Chancellor. Yeah. The main powerful black man gets assassinated. This is literally Martin Luther King Jr. here. We're talking like, oh my gosh, Malcolm X, Martin, this is not okay. This movie's not okay.
I like how just talking about this movie has just slowly changed all our opinions about the movie. Yeah,
I was still angry at it about ridiculous things.
I'm ready to just jump towards the end of the movie because the end of the movie has bigger implications as well. Like, oh my God.
Okay, so
because if you guys don't know, the assassination of Malcolm X wasn't done by white people. It was actually done by people of the Church of Islam who didn't like the way he was thinking and sent people to go and kill him. He was killed by other black people because he wanted a free world. I am not liking this movie, Spencer. I'm not liking where my head is at in this movie.
Yeah, there's a lot of really unfortunate parallels to, like, a lot of things, really.
He can't make any more Ponfar jokes. He's out.
I'm totally
it's really upset.
Over Ponfar now. I'm sad about this movie. Literally, not even like 20 minutes ago, and I was talking about, oh, this is a great end cap to the, you know, 2, 3, and 4s. Blah, blah, blah. Now I'm like, this movie needs to go away. Away.
I feel like this is going to be the first movie where, like, all of our scores have, like, just steadily dropped. On time of this review. So, yes, the Chancellor's ship is attacked by what appears to be the Enterprise. The Enterprise is having a hard time figuring out if they're shooting at it or if they aren't, which seems like a wild problem to have, but okay. Like, it's not like they're shooting phasers. It's shooting photon torpedoes, which... those have, you know, you have a certain amount, and at a certain point, you either have that amount or you don't.
They also ride on a conveyor belt to get down to the tube. So somebody's got to be down there by the tubes watching them tubes.
Yeah, so there's a whole assassination where someone goes over there, shoots a whole lot of people, and then...
I'm sorry, two people in white outfits go after the black-colored characters. I'm sorry... what?
I mean,
and it's a shot through the heart, like, and the wound was, do you know that Malcolm X, I believe, was assassinated with a shotgun? That wound did not look like a small, it was a laser. Yeah. How did it do that much? I'm sorry. I need to take this. I'm going to move this mic away. Go ahead.
Okay. Okay. So yes, while everyone's scrambling, Kirk goes over with Bones to, like, try to help. Chancellor dies. They're arrested by the Klingons. And then a whole bunch of new shenanigans start where, you know, they have to prove their chances in Klingon court where they have the high wizard apparently with fancy.
He's a high wizard. He legitimately looks like a D&D wizard, like an old timey one. It was great. I literally was going.
The only sci-fi aspect of this movie that seems legit to everything else going on
is the high wizard.
Is the high wizard.
And Worf and Grandpa Worf. As their legal defense.
Yeah.
Grandpa Worf. I was just like, Worf! And you're like, wait, this is Grandpa Worf. And I was like, dang.
Yes, it was nice seeing Michael Dorn in this movie. Yes. Living, like, his own version of, like, She-Hulk but Klingon. Mm-hmm. So I would have been interested in that TV show, but...
but no.
Didn't do that. So they lose because I guess he's not that great of a lawyer. But, like, it was also rigged against him. So at this point, while all this is happening, one of the better parts of the movie is focusing on Spock and Kim Cattrall's character going through the ship and, like, being very methodical and logical about what on earth happened here. And, like, just going through it bit by bit of, like, well, you know, if someone did go over there, they have to come back here because where else are they going to go? Like, the answer should be here. And, like, I really enjoyed this part of the movie.
He tried the whodunit. Let him have the whodunit, Eddie.
The whodunit part, like...
the whodunit wasn't racist.
Yeah, like, let's, like...
you want to bet?
I'm sure we could find something.
Are you looking up assassinations of black leaders on the Google?
No, not necessarily black leaders. Malcolm X was killed by a shotgun blast to his chest.
Eddie V.
Just saying.
Eddie V.
And then you get to
you're
the...
derailing.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Whodunit.
Yes, so we got to the whodunit. Amy, what did you think about the whodunit part? Because I thought it was great.
I liked that.
So did I at the beginning of this review.
Well, what do you think now?
Just the whodunit.
Just the whodunit.
That Reagan and his people went in and chose to.
Like, oh my gosh!
The one person, the white diplomat who was at the pulpit, is the one that gets saved, and nobody saved the colored alien, and he was going to be assassinated by another colored alien, and it's like the cycle never ends. Oh my god!
That's not the whodunit part of this. But thank you. I appreciate that it felt much like there was montaginess, which was very nice for the 90s, when they're like, we got to find all the uniforms. They're pulling out all the uniforms. And then they're like, I found a boot. And they slapped it on the locker. It's like, it's magnetic.
That boot part where, like, where he was like, this is your boot. And he just throws it at his feet. He's like, checkmate. But everyone's like, look at his feet. This doesn't
like,
fit.
They knew that his, and his feet are like big. They're not like, oh, they're regular feet. They're like, feet with added feet.
Yes.
And they just keep going, and I was like, dang, homie. And then when you get like, they're still going, oh no, what is wrong with our warp drive? And Scotty's like, nothing's wrong with it, it's perfect. He's like, oh, you need more time? And I was like, dang, Spock, you trying to do all the work.
Really, this becomes like Spock like having to save everyone, I guess, because he feels partially responsible.
He always feels responsible. He's Spock.
Yes.
Outside of the blatant racism, I do have to admit, this is the opportunity where we see Spock become embodying his more human side, even to the point of logically making it make sense to lie, where he doesn't say, where, what's her name? What is the Kim Cattrall's character?
She's Kim Cattrall. Kim Cattrall. She's Kim Cattrall and mushroom hair.
She's Lieutenant Varys.
Kim Cattrall and mushroom hair.
When Lieutenant Valeris is telling him, you know, oh, a lie? And he goes, no, an error.
A choice.
No, she says a choice.
Yeah.
I'm talking about when the scene you were talking about when he's talking about the ship's warp drive being down or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he tells her to signal Starfleet to let them know that Our warp drive is down and we need more time. And she says a lie and he goes, no, an error. He logically makes it make sense to him, but still does the human aspect of lying. So,
yeah. And here's the part where Starfleet starts to lose like where their logic should be. They then decide to ask Captain Sulu.
Who looks great.
Which, mind you, that's a whole nother element that just doesn't make sense. There's this massive blast of energy that creates a wave, and we never hear about it again.
No.
Like, they're literally just floating. No, about the wave. Like,
the big giant
Sulu and them are still in the wave. They're still there amongst the wave.
No, they. So, what had happened, and they explained it.
What had happened was.
They explained it at the beginning when they go, we got a report, and it was a couple of months from the time the wave happened with Captain Sulu and his entire ship, which, side note, he looked great. Like, I was so happy to see him. And then they're doing the report at Starfleet Command Headquarters, which the miniatures on that looked utterly trash. And they say, we had this big wave a couple of months ago. And so Sulu had to have made it back and gotten repairs and gone back out. But then, in the case of the missing whodunit, and we can't find the Enterprise and it's not coming home to roost, they're like, Captain Sulu, do you know what happened to the Enterprise? And we're just like, bro, serious?
I don't know him. Ask him of all people. This is how he's like, got like a direct connection to Kirk.
Yeah, they're like, you know, right? And he's like, no.
Yeah, it just comes off as weird. Like, Starfleet at this point in their history has become very incompetent at their jobs. Like, especially in like a lot of these three movies, because like they just come across as, we are working with after the fact information and we don't know what's happening, but we'll send in Kirk to fix it. Oh no, Kirk made it worse most of the time, except for the times he fixed it.
And then we go, oh, you fixed it. Wag a wag a finger.
Yeah, basically.
Wag a wag a finger.
Yeah, that was a whole thing with four.
It was. So much finger wagging.
Yeah, so after that part, what happens next? I feel like that's the part where...
more racism comes in.
Yeah, more racism, more ignoring the rules from Spock, where he just goes straight into the neutral zone to pick up Kirk. fucking bones from the prison.
The mining prison planet where they meet the changeling who looks like an owl lady and then turns into like a million things.
Okay, so here's the thing. The changeling, even though they called her that, she's also not like the traditional, well, not traditional. There's another group of changeling people who come up later on, and she is not that, because those later people are worse at changeling, at like changing than she is. I don't know what she, who, like where she's from or anything about her, because like I don't think they bring up her race again after this.
She said, "I'm a changeloid," but I was just like, I don't know what.
Yeah,
I don't know what that means.
Yeah,
that,
because the only other shapeshifters in Star Trek are the changelings specifically, and they don't show up till DS9.
See, and I'm being denied opportunities for changelings. Also,
I mean, you can still watch all 7 seasons. It's delightful.
Yeah, delightful. You have mentioned that. See, the thing that I appreciated was, even though like Bones and Kirk end up on the mining planet, I'm like, oh my gosh, there are so many other types of aliens that we get to see them. I'm like, where in the fresh boot scoop boogie have all of these guys been for so flipping long that like, why aren't they part of like Starfleet? Why haven't I seen any of their cadets? Also, some of the practical work and the makeup effects were really well done.
Well, see, you bring up a really interesting point, because they did have a lot of people, like aliens, in that prison. So much so that what they could have done instead was use one of those designs as like the main designs for like a swap in for the Klingons, since these Klingons are not very Klingon-esque.
No.
Besides like some of the looks department. And then, you know, you just have like whole bunch of blue people who, and you'd have a whole different feel for the movie.
Exactly. And I'm like, there's a whole bunch of people and there's a whole bunch of races and we're not even exploring any of them, and I don't know who they are, and that guy's saying that you need to give me your jacket and swear your allegiance to the Brotherhood of Aliens or else, and I'm like, I don't know none of these people and I have been robbed an opportunity to learn.
Yeah, also that line, Brotherhood of Aliens, just came off as, like, very human-centric. Like, it, for some reason, I don't know why, but in this movie, it feels like it's the humans and then there's everyone else. And it's, like, real pro-Earth, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, where the heck is this coming from? Because it is not in the previous movies we've watched. And it's not really a thing in like the movies that come after this, unless I'm forgetting something.
Well, and even so, when we look, we get to the, or we break when Kirk and Bones are getting sentenced, or they're before they go to trial. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, we can extradite him. And they come back to like the president of the Galactic Federation. And it's Red from that 70s show. And I was like, Why does he look like he's supposed to be James Wong but white from Big Trouble in Little China?
I don't even know.
That is really true.
Because he did, and I was like, I don't.
He's a blue-eyed white alien, okay? Let's get it right. He's got some like big old blue eyes, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. Very blue. I didn't negate that.
And his skin is like pearly white, and his hair is white.
His hair is like
very American,
see-through. And then you have the Romulan, like the Romulan ambassador who's there, and I couldn't even tell the difference between him or anybody else.
Okay, to be fair, the Romulans and Vulcans started off on the same planet. So, like, they have a shared ancestry, so that's why it gets a little bit confusing. Later on, like, the Vulcans have a very distinctive like outfit. That when you see them, you're like, "Oh, you're Romulan."
Okay.
And then anyone else.
But I couldn't even tell that he was like, he was anything. He was another man in a bowl cut.
He was.
Papa Spock. Papa Spock looked like Papa Spock. Mm-hmm. Like that was understandable. And I'm fairly certain that the ambassador to the Klingons at this junction, he had gotten a lot whiter as well. They had lightened his skin and his makeup because he was not as dark as when he was screaming about Kirk violating all sorts of things a couple movies ago. So I'm just like, I'm being robbed of opportunities to learn about other people and other species and other communities and cultures because somebody wants to make this the quote-a-thon and make sure everybody knows that parting is such sweet sorrow.
They want to, it seemed like the writers were like, okay, we need to write a script, Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. How do we do this? Man, we don't have any time for this. We're still doing blah, 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 blah. Tell you what, every four lines, put in a quote from a book. Make it fit. Just make it fit. And that's what happened with this movie. Like, towards the tail end of the script, they're like, just give the main bad guy about six quotes from a book, back to end, back to back end. And then we'll call it a good day there.
I mean, quote sounds nice, but like, I feel like what it really came towards, like near the end with Christopher Plummer, is like, we were like, ah, crap, we need to write his dialogue. And someone was like, all right, well, I've got the works of William Shakespeare here, so mm-hmm. I'm just going to turn to a random page and then point, and then we're using that line.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that's what really... he was just spinning around in a chair.
Like, my son's got his literary book from middle school. Let me go grab that. I think there's a whole list of his top 10 quotes.
You know, it was just the writer's room from that Key and Peele sketch. For Gremlins 2, but it was just for like, okay, we're doing a Star Trek movie. We're going to give it a great name.
Jordan Peele comes in like, oh my God, you get a Klingon, you get a Klingon.
You get a Klingon. Yes, I love Shakespeare, but this was just, No. And Christopher Plummer, I appreciated that gentleman, but not in this movie.
My brain is
you
just
look so sad.
I'm
now.
Broken. Because like I was super excited, stoked about this movie, and then I'm like, I'm thinking about it, and I'm like, oh my God, oh my God, and it's like,
So to catch up where Spencer is, the Change Lloyd ends up getting Kirk and Bones out, wink.
Yeah.
To the top of the ice.
Why was that a wink?
Because they figure out that they're being double crossed.
You could have said that any other way, and you're like, got them out, wink. Like, what did they get out?
Ponfar.
Yeah. Which, by the way, her visage of choice was a black woman, just saying, and she's one of the bad guys, I'm just saying.
Yeah, and she also ends up getting murdered by the Klingons because surprise, she
black
was in
black
cahoots.
Crime, I'm just saying.
And then they happen to get beamed up to the Enterprise, and they're like, we must go, and they find out surprise, Kim Cattrall all along was in cahoots.
Yeah, and then they play the song, It Was Valeris All Along.
Yep.
Exactly. Oh, my gosh.
Exactly.
I mean, mind you.
And then it's a race against a bird of prey to get to where they're going.
The lead up to them finding out it was Valeris was fun. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed that. And the reveal was, it wasn't a shocker, but it definitely was fun to see it revealed.
Yeah.
And to see kind of the disappointment on Spock's face, as well as like the kind of accomplished and need to make the next move, you know, impression from Kirk. It was a really great reveal, and especially the interrogation, quote unquote, I guess if you want to call it, between Kirk and the bridge with Valeris, and Spock going like ultra mind meld, you know, getting information.
He double-fisted it.
Yeah, he did. He had to put two hands and type that like a bad essay. Like, he seriously was like putting fingers all over getting information. Kim Cattrall hasn't been invited like that since.
No.
Since Big Trouble in Little China.
So they're racing in the Enterprise because they've contacted Sulu and like, where is everybody meeting for the secret meeting about peace? Because surprise, the assassinated Klingon Gorkon has his daughter is like, we are going to still try for peace.
Yeah, his daughter has assumed the role as the High Chancellor.
Show up, let's go. And everybody's like, oh crud, the bird of prey is still out there, and they're gonna murder again. And so it's like, now it's the race against everybody to get to the planet, to get there, to stop an assassination attempt, but also like to stall long enough that Sulu can simultaneously show up, but not put up our shields. Like,
I mean, this is one of those things where it's like, let's just do things to be dramatic instead of like, let's do things that make sense for the characters.
And because, interestingly enough, why above anybody else would Mr. Sulu know,
Captain Sulu,
know where this secret meeting is?
Because he's a captain.
Like, because it's the Excelsior and it's kind of like the prime ship. Well, at least it was like back in movie, two, three?
You're asking us?
No, I'm trying to remember.
No, because they introduced it in that one.
Because they introduced it was the brand new one that they wanted Scotty to work off, and they're like, take it out. And then that had to be three because it was Search for Spock.
Yes, yeah. That's what it was.
Hey,
good brain. Replaced after that.
Yeah.
Brain works.
Good job.
Yeah. It was just interesting. And then you get them all coming together to take on the bird of prey that is cloaked, that they're able to make out of whatever they had, operate on a torpedo to make it a cloak gas expelling seeking missile that lands its targets, and then they just slaughter it, with Christopher Plummer ending his monologue with "to be or not to be."
Which was done. No, I was so against that right there.
That's the dumbest way to use the that line from that soliloquy anyway.
Yeah, so with that, oh no wait, I want to bring up like really poor security at this conference that has super high security. So okay, super secret, nobody knows the location. Wink. But then like Kirk and crew are just beaming down with phasers ready and no one even stops them.
And like I have to give Nichelle so many props. Uhura is like forcing she's at the front. She's forcing people out the way. She's like, get out the way. Get out. I'm like, I love you.
I know. She's seen some stuff. And she's not putting up with anyone.
But nope. Still, nobody stopped
them. They had
him.
Me thumbing through a book. I'm going to push someone down.
Oh.
That's the only thing I could think of. I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like that's right.
My gosh.
But yeah, then like speech is given about peace, blah, 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 blah. Undiscovered country, blah, 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 blah.
And then Red like, Foreman takes the stage. And
yeah. For the second time.
Yeah, and then he's like, I guess we have peace now or we're working towards it or something. And so at this point, Starfleet gets wise and they're like, we're decommissioning your ship, Kirk.
Right.
And they're all like, you sure about that, buddy?
Honestly, that ship's design is old for Starfleet and should have just been done away with like a while ago, but whatever.
Whatever.
So we've basically reached the end of the movie where we watch them sail into a star or
this
whatever.
This movie.
So real quick round table question. You've seen a good chunk of the TOS, the original series cast in movies.
You really have to explain TOS.
I just want to make sure listening. Everyone on who's listening, they might have skipped a few weeks.
Yes, I appreciate this.
You're still an intern.
Cadet.
You about to get put into a torpedo tube.
Calm down, ensign.
We're about to shoot you out like a Vulcan like you are. You just,
but like you've only really missed one in five. And you didn't miss much in either of those movies. So I would like to know, what are your impressions of just overall the TOS series of movies? Like, you think they're good or you think they're bad? Like, what
do you think? Racist. Because that's the first thing Eddie's going to do is racist.
Like, I'm going to be honest, miss kind of that on both viewings of this. But yeah, I want to get your opinions on this.
So
because technically, I think what you're driving at is this is the last movie we'll talk about that has to do with the original series cast.
Yeah, after that, we are on to Picard. Yeah.
But I like so, Picard.
Well, but he's saying this is the end of this chapter of Star Trek. So I think that's a great question. I really do. Yeah. So
for me, I've actually really enjoyed this. I've known a lot about the memes. I've seen caricatures of the characters. I've seen the tropes. Like, I've seen other things and not seen the original cast. And this has been as troubled as it is in a lot of spaces. it's been really fun to actually kind of see characters and people who genuinely actually care about the character that people have come to love for so long. I didn't think I would like Scotty as much as I like Scotty. I knew I was going to like Uhura, but I was just like, dang, girl, I really like you. Like, it's become something that's so neat to see. And then especially to be able to see Leonard Nimoy be like, I knew who Leonard Nimoy was. I had seen Leonard Nimoy just as the himself. And I've seen all of Futurama, you got me. seeing him there, or having his brief cameo in the newer Star Trek movies. But this was such just a delight to actually see him in his element, originating and making something so iconic. So yeah, I actually really enjoyed this, and that was surprising for me, like in a good way.
Nice.
Hmm. Hey. I was a big fan of TNG, and I watched what was of the Deep Space Nine series because of that documentary. Mm-hmm. And mind you, they're good and it's interesting. However, it's also really cool to see the origins of that story. And much like Amy, I've only seen bits and pieces of these movies on, like I said, Saturday afternoon movies on, you know, on Fox or whatever, or the series like intermittently on like TV Land or something, like being able to see it. Putting it into kind of like these exposés of the apex of these characters and at their finest moments really did give me a better perspective on exactly what I was missing out. And between 2, 3, 4, you know, and maybe 6, being able to see how these characters, these performers, gave so much life to these characters and to create the icons that they did, I can see why William Shatner is known for being the individual that he is in terms of in pop culture and satire and all that, in a good way. Mm-hmm. And why, like, every uptight person or every person who looks like they have a stick up their butt has always been like mirrored to Spock to a certain extent. But also in that same light, I can also see why that isn't exactly correct as well, seeing his more human side appear throughout these films that we've seen. Even seeing him crack wise with some jokes. Mm. And just falling in love with all these different characters of the cast and wanting to see more of that. I feel like these movies really did highlight what are some of probably the most memorable scenes of these movies and this franchise. So, yeah, it really gave me a great perspective on what I was missing out. Why? What about you? You being the Trekkie of all, seeing the series, seeing these movies, how do the movies that we've seen thus far make you feel about the overall franchise?
Well, one, it was just fun to get to watch these with you guys. Like, that was kind of really the best part. I know we're not done yet, but like we're kind of hitting like the note for this this cast. But yeah, this one, like a lot of these movies were as good as I remember, and some of the bad ones, well, 5, I'm specifically calling out 5, it's not as bad as I remember. And I think that really kind of just speaks to, you know, you're not always the same person you were.
Yeah.
Which is, it's an interesting introspection. But, like, you know, sometimes it's worth just revisiting movies, even ones you kind of didn't like. Because, like, sometimes you'll have a different perspective on it.
I think if you would have been more hard-nosed on, 3 not being a good movie, mm-hmm, and not flexing a bit on that, I think we would have missed out on a really great opportunity to see that movie unfold and get to see Robin Curtis's Savick, you know, performance and being able to recognize just exactly what that journey for Spock really looked like, coming back into almost essentially being reborn, you know, to this level of the series thus far, this level of this point in the franchise.
Yeah, and another thing that I took away that I was kind of surprised I didn't recognize before, maybe it's just the way I saw it before, I didn't realize that, like, while this movie and, like, these movies wrap up, like, you know, arcs for most of the characters, it doesn't really wrap up Spock's arc, because this is actually the beginning of, like, the final thing about Spock, which is, like, his ambassador arc, really. Because, like, from this movie, he immediately goes into the Next Generation, and he's, like, Ambassador Spock, and he's like, so I'm trying to, like, fix the relationship between, like, the Vulcans and the Romulans, and, like, that continues into the J.J. Abrams movies, where, like, they continue to explore that. And, like, it kind of starts with this movie, and I was like, that's a really cool thing to just see, like, that one thread, like, continue across, like, TV shows and movies with Leonard Nimoy's character until, like, he died. Like I was really impressed with that.
So
let's get into, like, final scores, which I feel like have dropped considerably since we started this review. Let's start with you, Eddie. No, I'm going with you.
Okay. The movie, with hesitation, passes for me in terms of its story. Mm-hmm. It is a very unique story. If I take out every parallel that this movie does convey and every aspect of discrimination and bias, which, mind you, yes, I know, and I know there's probably people screaming, Star Trek has always been about, you know, diversity and blah, 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 whatever.
Kind of.
Yeah, kind of. Because even that aforementioned, like, first interracial kiss was forced.
Yes.
I think we talked about that. Mm-hmm. So it's like, but, I mean, there's just certain blatant things. And mind you, maybe it's just the era we live in now. Maybe in light of, like, not only, like, the Me Too movement, but the Black Lives Matter and the shape of the world we are in today, with, like, the Ukraine and Russia, and with the way police brutality is on a whole nother level thanks to, you know, technology and social media. And maybe that's because it's more at the forefront of my mind. But even still, like, there are certain stories that need to have a white glove treatment in ensuring that it gets conveyed in the best possible way if this is what they're trying to do. And I can see, as a movie critic, I can step outside of my own personal bias and see the attempts made with this movie. And that's where I'm putting the merit of the pass on, in the effort of what it was trying to do, and in the effort of what it was hoping to accomplish in recognizing bias and bigotry and racism to a certain level. And as I stated, like, with things like that, especially when you discuss that at the height of, like, the Reagan era ending and the Carter era beginning, or whatever, whatnot, or the George Bush, whoever was coming in at the time, like, you have to be careful and you have to be mindful and you have to attack it with the most utmost care and consideration, that in the future, people are going to see this again. And if the world is not in the same shape as it was when it first was released, or if it's in worse shape or however shape, this movie is going to mean something. And that's where this movie falls in line in the aspect of, you know, some people will say this was a, you know, a complete masterpiece in recognition of, you know, the racism and bigotry going on in the world. And some will say it's definitely a, you know, addition to that, you know, fight, and addition to, you know, the reasons why people were so misguided during that time and not understanding racism or bigotry. Either way, being a critic and stepping outside of myself, I can say I know there was an attempt made. I can see the attempt. I can see the work put into it. With that said, I am going to give it a 3.5 out of 5. Just because based on the merit itself and the way that it's been put into light and the way I've been receiving it and the way that I hope that there is, I mean, if there is somebody out there who can better explain it, by all means, I implore you. If there is something I'm missing, by all means, let me know. But from this perspective, the best I can do is a 3.5.
Makes sense.
Amy.
So, I'm going to get weird and follow suit with this movie. First off, the film does pass for me. And much like this film, I'm going to try to cram in as many quotes as I can into this monocling. So if we shadows have offended, think but this and all is mended, that you have but slumbered here while these visions did appear. To quote Biggie, was all a dream. And to quote Nichelle, you thought this was reality. It's fantasy. While this is not my favorite one out of the entire set, it did have a plot that felt fun in the whodunit aspect, and I'm happy to give it a 3.5 out of 5 monocles.
Okay. Yes.
Spencer!
Okay, so for me, this movie passes.
The only African-American at this table. Go ahead.
Yeah, but like, I don't know, like, I felt a different way about this movie yesterday than
today. Exactly. We all did.
Because, like, it seems crazy to
me. Freaking Christopher Lloyd, I swear.
It seems crazy to me that this movie has this specific problems when simultaneously, this movie came out December of 91.
Mm-hmm.
This is during, I believe, the 5th season of TNG, which seems...
Wait, TNG was already going on at this point?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, because like, yeah. But like, with the way Picard like handles situations and like, you know, his knack for like diplomacy, I feel like I'd see a bit more in here with how, you know, this whole movie handles like, you know, dealing with the Klingons. Mm-hmm. Because like at this point people have been seeing Worf on the bridge of the Enterprise, and I know that hasn't happened like for this crew at that point in time, but I still feel like it should have like that Star Trek like, you know, level of care of like, you know, trying to seek to understand foreign cultures, which is what Star Trek is kind of known for.
Yeah.
And it seems wild that this one is just like, these guys smelling like all this crap against like the Klingons in this movie. It seems kind of just really odd and strange to me.
Yeah.
But
see how much you've grown since yesterday when you saw it, and now
I was such a blurry-eyed child yesterday. I'm awake to the world.
There we go.
It's destruction. But yeah, for me, I agree with both you guys. I'm gonna give it a 3.5.
In hopes of a better tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. For the undiscovered country.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that about wraps up another awesome episode of the Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out anywhere where podcasts are streaming. That is iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, iHeart, TuneIn. You can tune in to wherever your heart's desire is and find us on those platforms. Give us a follow, The Filmlosophers. Give us a 5-star review. I believe we earned it. Hey, you know. Also, you can check us out on our website at thefilmlosophers.com. I'm sorry, filmlosophers.com. There we got over allegedly 300 episodes and counting, everything from anime to action to sci-fi to romance. Everything that you're looking for, we got it. Check it out, filmlosophers.com. Also, as I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, you can check us out on the socials over at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at Filmosophy101. I almost broke there. This has been a great trek into the Star Trek universe, and we have one more episode to do, and that is next week's final episode for this month's celebration of Star Trek. But as we mentioned, we want to hear your thoughts. Drop us a line on our social pages or on our podcast pages on the podcast streaming apps, and let us know what you think, because honestly, these types of movies are built for conversation, and we want to hear your thoughts. So, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I possibly Ensign Amy? Maybe.
Class dismissed.